Good evening, everybody. Welcome to a special Tuesday night edition of We Got Next. I'm Ricky Hampton, along with Big Mo, former Milwaukee Bucks center Paul Mokeski. Hope everybody's having a great day. And Mo, it's just boring around here, man. Nothing is going on whatsoever.
No Stanley Cup finals, no NBA finals.
Yeah,
no bedlam in the golf world that's going berserk all world.
Hey, but I can't wait to talk about the finals, because before the game yesterday, I remember you posting, "Watch Miami tonight." And I was thinking, which is why you're Big Mo and I'm just Rick. I thought Miami's best shot was going to be game one, and they got beat easily, but they rallied to win game two. And we're going to get to that. But Mo, before we get to that, we got to spend a couple of minutes talking about what happened in the world of golf today. And as a performer, professional athlete, you understand the business side of high-level sports like the PGA Tour. And almost everybody out there now knows the PGA Tour has merged with the LIV Tour after going back and forth the last year saying this was never going to happen. In fact, Mo, let me play this for you.
In the New York Post yesterday by Brian Wacker about a 9/11 coalition of families and survivors of the 2001 terrorist attacks. 9/11 families united.
And let me set this up, too. This is PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan talking to Jim Nance regarding the situation with LIV. This was just about a year ago.
Sent a letter to the representatives of Phil, Dustin, Bryson, Reed, and others, quote, expressing their outrage towards the golfers for participating in the new league and accusing them of sports washing and betraying the United States, end quote. That's gotten a lot of steam over the last 24 hours. That story first reported again in the New York Post. How much did you talk to your players about the possible ramifications if they sign on with the new league?
Well, I talked to players. I've talked at a player meeting, and I've talked to a number of players individually for a long period of time. And I think you'd have to be living under a rock to not know that there are significant implications. And as it relates to the families of 9/11, I have two families that are close to me that lost loved ones. And so my heart goes out to them. And I would ask, you know, any player that has left or any player that would ever consider leaving, have you ever had to apologize for being a member of the PGA Tour?
I mean, come on, man. That's why today I heard one of, you know, hey, I'm going to take the criticism, and I know people are calling me a hypocrite. Because you are a hypocrite. They're not calling you a hypocrite. You are a hypocrite. I mean, but, you know, like in all businesses and in the world and in the sports world, money trumps everything. So I don't know what the specifics are. I don't know why the PGA would join with the LIV Tour that evidently is losing millions and millions of dollars, probably might just be able to survive one more year. Why would you fold at this point unless you're getting something huge, which huge means money?
No, I mean, I don't know how. It's going to be interesting to see if Jay Monahan continues to, if it survives this as the commissioner of the PGA Tour, because at the players' meeting with the commissioner today, some of them were calling for their job. But here's what they were really pissed about. They weren't told anything. Now, this would not happen to you as a NBA player, because you would have been part of the NBA Players Association. But nonetheless,
which is a union, an official union. Yes.
But do you understand why these guys on tour are pissed off? Some of them who left tens of millions of dollars on the table to try to stay loyal to the PGA Tour to see Monahan go back and cut this deal.
Without, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's a different situation than the NFL and the NBA and the Major League Baseball, because all those player unions, all those player associations are unions. They're official. They abide by the union rules of America, you know, so that's different. But, you know, if you want to survive as a league, you know, you need to, you know, communicate. And that was his big thing, right? I like to communicate with my players. And you know what? If I was a player and I left tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, Dustin Johnson, right?
Dustin Johnson took $100 million.
Yeah,
and Justin Thomas could have JT could have made $100 million, but stayed.
Justin Thomas took $100 million and then made $30 million on top of that.
I'm sorry, we're both wrong. Dustin Johnson.
Dustin Johnson. Yeah. So you know, if I'm one of the players in the PGA that stuck with you, because we're united, man, we're together. I got your back. And so, you know, my question is, so remember when you said how families you were close to were affected and, you know, you almost had a tear in your eye. And so those people don't matter anymore. A year later, they don't matter. Their lives don't matter. Your close family, friends don't matter. Or did you just lie at the time? I mean, I don't know how he can survive this. Because quite frankly, the other players that left and made hundreds of millions, tens of millions of dollars guaranteed, and now they're welcomed back with open arms like nothing happened. While the players that stuck by you, had your back, lost out on tens of millions of hundreds of millions of dollars, and they're just supposed to smile and say, hey, everything's good, everybody hug up now. That's not going to happen. It's going to be tough.
Because, Mo, if JT, Justin Thomas, if he wins five tournaments this summer, he still doesn't get that $100 million.
Nope, that's gone. That's already, you know, you already got that in. Those players already got the bank. Now they can come back like nothing happened. I mean, you can't tell me that there's not going to be friendships were broken already, and now you're going to try to mend them, or you know, the Ryder Cup team is going to be united. No, they're not. They're not, because it's always going to be, hey, you were one of those guys, you know, almost like a stab, right? You were one of those guys that left. Now, you know, I can't say that if I was a player that was good and, you know, I could make 150 mil plus another 50 mil, you know, I don't know if I would be able to turn that down, but, you know, I would never think that I could come back to the same organization I left and everything would be great. I mean, that makes no sense at all.
Yeah, and welcome everybody. We appreciate everybody tuning in. We're already getting comments. Steve Schroeder says it's blood money. PGA Tour from Brian Shapiro, bunch of hypocrites. Steve, they offered Tiger, around $800 million. And as much money as Tiger got, you're not going to get that $800 million.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. That's almost $1 billion. Are you kidding me?
But Paul, this is why, you know, we were talking before we came on the air. I have so much respect for professional athletes and the job you guys would do, because, you know, covering it every day, understood the business aspect of it. Whereas, you know, I think the everyday fan wants you to come to every mini camp, every training camp, don't miss a practice, don't hold out. But this is why players fight for every penny that you earn, right?
Yeah, it's a business. It's your livelihood. So, but there's two sides to that. Like, you know, I'm going to fight for, you know, with my union to get fair wages, and then I'm going to fight for my own contract and become a free agent that I earn that contract because someone's going to offer me that money. And then I'm going to honor my contract. There are other players, you know, not to name names, Carl Malone, you know, that they negotiated, they would sign 5-year deals and negotiate every second year. And that's not true. If you sign something, you should honor that on both ways. You know, so, you know, there's both ends, but, you know, this is people's livelihood. And, you know, you look at, you know, the LeBrons and all those players, you know, and come on, Curry's, they make 30 to 50 million a year. But guess what? Most of the league is not making that. Most of the league, you got guys making the million, 2 million, 5 million, nice money, good money, after taxes, cut it in half. But it's good money, but you don't know how long you're going to make that. Maybe 3 years, maybe 1 year. So you got to go get a job, you know? So, you know, you need, you know, and that's where I think the NBA league and Players Association have been tied together because of their collective bargaining years and years ago, where they split the profits 50-50 and they all agreed upon that. So you win, I win. And I think that's why there's not been any lockout in so many years. And that's why the whole thing is prospering, because of that agreement. And, you know, and they communicate and, you know, they do things the right way. I mean, the NBA is a multi-billion dollar company. So, you know.
I know this is early on, Mo, it just happened. And you know, your expertise is the National Basketball Association. But again, you are a former professional athlete. How do you think these guys who were really jilted and screwed over by the PGA Tour, I mean, they just suck it up?
Well, they're going to have to, but that doesn't mean they're going to like it. That doesn't mean that everything is back to normal. I mean, if they want to make a living, there's no other place to go, right? There's a PGA Tour, right?
Right.
So now
to make that kind of money, right?
Yeah, to make. Well, yeah, I mean, you want to play in a league where you can make the most money, right? No matter what you do, or work for a company where you can make the most money for your family, for your legacy, for your kids, for everything. So, you know, they're going to have to suck it up and play. They're not going to be happy about it, you know, and there's going to be conflicts. Watch on the golf course, you know, that, you know, people are going to be pissed off at each other and look at each other sideways, you know, and, you know, that's just the way it is. But, you know, this is different because I talk, you know, looking at, you know, the ABA merged with the NBA back in the day, right? The ABA was failing, but they did have Dr. J's and guys like that. So they merged, but the NBA only took about half the teams of the ABA, and then the other ones just kind of went away. But it created one solid entity. The AFL combined with the NFL and become today's NFL. And that became stronger too. But this is different because, you know, in these leagues, teams, if you play in the NBA or the ABA or Major League Baseball or hockey, NHL, you're an employee of your team. You're an employee of your team, your company. But in the PGA, you're an independent contractor. So you're not an employee, you're an independent contractor. So that's a different merger you're talking about now. You're not talking about the Live League and the PGA, and you know, and they're all coming, you know, all the teams are coming together and making one big unit. That's what the commissioner's trying to sell. He tried to sell that today. It's better for the game, and 10 years from now, it's different. It's different because you're not teams coming together. Your two leagues come together with independent contractors on the side.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I really want to get your thoughts on that. And Chris Ramsey, golfers are more serious. No time for Happy Gilmore, Tim Conway, dwarf goes golfing. You have to see the human. And Mo, he says you're right about the money. Steve, look at the new NFL package. You got to pay $400 to see an NFL game. I think that is, if you want to get the all the NFL games on, I think they moved the NFL packages to YouTube, and yeah, they did go up on the price where you can see every NFL game. And Mo, these, you know, these things aren't going back. Because it's just too much money out there.
It's called supply and demand. $400 is a lot of money, but if you pay it, that's all they care about. And you're going to prove that that's the right price.
When you pay it, yeah. And the owners of the St. Louis Spirits got to deal with the NBA merger. Oh, yeah, that was Ozzie and Daniel Silva, and they made about $500 million or so.
That was the best business deal made by anybody in the whole world.
Yeah.
They got paid not to play and not to spend money every year in perpetuity. However, before David Stern stepped away and passed away, he paid that off finally at the end.
Yeah.
There was three teams like that, I think, but yeah.
Yeah, they paid him off in 2016.
But you got to realize, like, in 75, I think, I mean, 85, 1985, I was at a player's trip. Hell yeah, I am. Well, let's go. I'm in Vegas, baby. So I remember at the Players Association, we signed a deal to get some percentage of the marketing money for the league that at that point was, I think, $25 million. That's what that was at that point. Well, it's about $2 billion now.
Hey, that is unreal, man. Hey, let's get to the association.
Wait, one more thing on golf. One of the biggest announcements that you don't even know about, I'm going to break it here on our show. Coach Mo played golf this weekend.
Whoa.
For the first time in 8 years. I played in a scramble tournament, a charity scramble tournament. I didn't hit all my shots, but I hit about half of them. So that's breaking news right there.
Good to hear, Mo.
I'll be ready for you when you come out, Ricky.
Yes, sir. You know I'm going to need a couple of strokes here and there.
Oh, no. I'm 66 years old, but my golf swing is about 100 because it's only arms. I'm the guy that hits it 150, and that's it, 150 yards.
We'll talk about it. But, Miami Heat game two. Everybody thinks they're going to get run over. But lo and behold, the Heat emerged in the altitude with a 111-108 victory over the Denver Nuggets to tie the series at 1-1 as they head back to Miami. And my man Big Mo called it that day. And I don't know what the hell. When I read what you said, I'm like, dude, this ain't going to happen. What did you see, and why is it happening game one?
You got to look at – see, I thought they could sneak away game one, but both teams played terrible, by the way. Denver played bad, too. Denver played
game
bad.
Game one or
– What's that?
Game two.
Which game? Game one. Okay. Both teams played horrible. The first half of game one was a joke, hard to watch. It was terrible. They're all missing shots. Miami, you know, but Miami played worse. Miami played as bad as they could play in game one, right? And, I mean, they shot 40% from the two, 33 from the three. They shot 100% from the free throw line, but they only shot two free throws the whole game, too.
Yeah.
Denver shot 20. So Denver was a plus 18 at the free throw line. So, you know, they ended up only losing by 11, but they played horrible. Butler had 13 points. Martin had 3. Strus had 0. Robinson had 3. They were like a combined 2 for 20. Bam had a great game. Vincent played well. Lowry played well. And Love didn't play. So my thinking in game two is, and if I'm a coach and I'm in their locker room, we can't play any worse. We were horrible. We didn't follow the game plan. We couldn't make a shot. We were horrible. Guess what? We're going to follow the game plan. We're going to add Love to our starting lineup, which was golden. He had 10 rebounds in game two. And guess what, guys? We're going to make those shots. And guess what's going to happen? The pressure is going to flip-flop onto Denver. So, and that's, yeah, I could see that happening because of how bad Miami played in game one. That's what. And by the way, from day one, I have the series as Denver winning in game seven in Denver. That's my call.
Chris Ramsey, Nuggets, no defense, gave up a 15-point lead. And, of course, the Joker had 41. When they were down 15, Mo, did you see, was it anything that stood out that turned that around for the Heat? Boy, they got a great contribution from Duncan Robinson, hit some nice shots for him. As they started chopping into that lead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing I noticed, which is mind-boggling, the Miami sloppy zone bothers Denver just as much as it bothered Boston, which is mind-boggling. I mean, you take pick and rolls away. Well, not really if you're executing well, but they didn't. The other thing that stuck out was Miami running the same play over and over again, the little bam catching at the top with the little pin away and curl action. Denver messed up that twice in a row in a big part and got a layup by Robinson and a three by Vincent. So they were messing up their coverages defensively, and that really stuck out. And, Miami wasn't afraid. They just kept playing hard. Miami was way more physical in game two. Even though Zeller, you know, I don't think he's big enough. I'd rather have played the turkey kid. But at least he bangs with the Joker. And, you know, great pass like that. Unbelievable. But Joker had 41 points, you know, 12 rebounds, but only 4 assists, right? So, you know, that's a big thing. And part of that is, in the zone, he's struggling to make passes, but you know, Miami's not scared. It's no fluke, man. Whoever thought Miami would get swept is a joke. You don't know basketball. If you think Miami beat the Bucks, Miami beat the Boston Celtics. They're not going to get swept by Denver. Both those teams are better than Denver. So you know, I see this as a series. I think that Denver wakes up. I think that their coach jumped on them for not playing hard. Denver looked scared in the fourth quarter, didn't they? Denver looked like they hadn't been in the finals before, which they have. Miami looked like a team that's been in the finals, which they have. And, you know, they look scared. But I think that's going to flip-flop in game three tomorrow. And I think Denver is going to get more focused. And I think Denver wins game three. And then Miami wins game four, and let's see what happens in game five.
Okay, Steve Schroeder has Denver in six. And I like this. I did not see this interview, but I like guys who stand by what they do. I don't know if y'all saw the game interview with Struce, but he was asked if he was worried about missing. He said he was not worried. He would just keep firing it up. And that's what shooters do, right, Mo?
Here's what I tell players in the G League. Do what you do. Don't do what you don't do. If you're a shooter, shoot. If you can't shoot, attack the rim. If you're a defender, defend. Do what you do. Don't do what you don't do. And I've told the story a million times. Playing with the Bucks, Brian Winter is one of the best shooters I ever played with from South Carolina. We played in Denver, I think, on a Thursday night or whatever, and he was 0 for 21. And then we go to the Lakers and play the next night, and he was 15 for 21. And the reporter asked him, you know, when you were 0 for 21, what were you thinking? He said, I was thinking I could make my next 21 in a row. That's what I was thinking. And that's what shooters do. And, you know, Struce played a good first half, not great second half. And Duncan played a great fourth quarter, not a great three quarters, first, second, third, but they were timely. And they have a coach and their best player, Butler, saying, should keep shooting. If you're open, keep shooting. That's what you do. But the biggest move, I thought, finally, is they put Love into the starting lineup. He was the leading rebounder with 10, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the biggest move. And you know what? He's smart. I think he hit one three, but, you know, you got to honor him at the three-point line. So I think that was a big strategic thing. And don't think Denver is going to sit there and say, "What was me?" They're going to come back with another counter. They're going to figure out how to guard the pick-away stuff and the curls, and they're not going to do that. Okay, that's a great – Chris, when you watch this game two, if you watched it, and if you want to rewatch it, watch how fast Miami plays. Watch how fast they take the ball out. They are speeding up the game. Miami wants to speed up the game. Denver wants to execute and play slower. Not slow, slower. But Miami, when you watch even the first quarter, they were taking the ball out quickly. Let's go. And then Kevin Love, how many great outlet passes did he have off of rebounds? That's huge.
Yeah. Steve thought it was a great pickup. I know we talked about that. Mo, a veteran guy, played championship caliber basketball. And he delivered last night after sitting out, not seeing any time, he doesn't get pissed off or anything. That's a pro, right?
Yeah. But if you look, like seven game series, right? We've talked about this before. So the stars usually are going to do their thing. It's the role players that go up and down a lot. So let's look at game one. Denver. The Joker had 27, 10, and 14, triple-double. Murray had 16 and 10 assists. Those are the stars, right? Butler struggled. He only had 13, 7, and 7. So he struggled. But Bam had 26 and 13. Those are the stars, right, in game number one. But in their role players, Caleb Martin, who was almost MVP of the Boston series, correct? He was almost MVP of the Boston series, had 3 points and four rebounds. Strus had no points. Robinson had three. And if you look at Denver, Porter Jr. had 14 and 13. Gordon had 16, and Brown had 10. Now let's look at the second game. So the Joker had 41 and 11. Murray had a tough game, 18, but he had 10 assists. But Porter, instead of 14 and 13, had 5 and 6. Gordon had 12 and 7 instead of 16 and 6. And Pope had 6. Brown had 11. But you look at Miami, Butler had 21, 4, and 9. That's good. Martin only had 3 and 5. Bad. Strus had 14. Robinson had 10. Bam had his 21 and 10. And Vincent had 23. The guy had 23. So those are the guys that are going up and down a little bit.
Yeah. And that's Chris, the unknown player. And Duncan Robinson only had 10 points, but those were big points.
I think they're all in the fourth quarter.
Timely point. Hey, going back a little bit, somebody asked this. Who was president of the spokesperson in the 80s, I think he's asking the Players Association in the early 80s. You mentioned before we came on the air, there was one time during your 12-year career where there's some player strife with the league, and you guys almost went on strike.
Yeah, that was early on. That was the closest it's been. That was like 40 years ago. But I think Oscar Robertson was the first president of the Players Association.
Right.
I think Isaiah Thomas was president for a while. But along with presidents, they also have attorneys that represent the association. So, That's the key thing, is to have an attorney that represents it. But
and each team has a representative, correct?
Each team has a player rep, and they're supposed to, like, say there was a vote. We're going to vote if we're going to strike, right? So this is what's supposed to happen. Every player rep from every team has a vote between their players and their on their team, and they report it to the league, I mean to the Players Association, and then they do the count and they decide whether they want to strike or not. That's how it's supposed to work. But and that's all the things. You know, whatever comes up, collective bargaining agreement, the same thing. So everybody's communicating, everybody's informed. That was the big thing. Everybody needs to be informed, and that's the difference between what the NBA does and what the PGA did. They didn't inform anybody what was going on. They just did it.
Yeah. What do you see going into tomorrow's game?
Like I said, I think Denver's going to come more focused. I think they're going to play better. I think they're going to have an answer to the zone. I think Miami, they're unique, though. A normal team in that situation would relax, take a deep breath. We got one in Denver. Let's relax. We might lose game three. Miami's not built that way, though. They're just not built from the top to the bottom. I think they'll be focused, but, you know, I just have a feeling Denver wins game three. I don't know why. Here's a thing that I think will play big for Miami. I think Bam, Butler, all those guys will be okay. Struz, Robinson. Let's see what happens with Caleb Martin. There's my focus right there, Caleb Martin. Remember, he was scoring 20, 25 in the Boston series, and now he's scoring 5 and 6. What happened?
Yeah.
Well, Caleb Martin can go home and get on a roll and become a big factor. He was the second best player in the Boston series next to Butler. It wasn't Bam. So yeah. Caleb steps up and becomes that guy. Now they have Bam, Caleb, and Butler. That's a tough combo, but we'll see. For some reason, I don't know, I think Denver gets focused. Sometimes teams focus more on the road. They get away from their home. They get in a hotel. I guess they went to a Green's house today that lives about an hour away. He's got some probably mansion. And they had a great dinner and great bonding. That's what they did yesterday or today.
Hey, Steve wants to know, what were your union dues, Mark?
I don't know, man. Probably a couple $100, I think. Probably five. I don't know, 4 or 3.
Yeah, Kate, you could have made the argument for Martin being the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. He played that well in that.
Yeah, I said that. It was cold. If Butler doesn't have a great game seven, Caleb gets the MVP of the East Finals. But he's just, where is he? 3-5, 4-2. Where happened to him? Where'd he go?
Hey, there's some other NBA news. Are rumors or speculation?
No, not in the NBA.
Regarding Kyrie Irving and his future with the Mavericks. There's talk of him wanting to join LeBron James in L.A. There's talk of LeBron going to Dallas. There's talk of Dallas trading him. You're in that front office, Mo. What do you do with Irving? Because number one, you don't think he and Luka can really play together, right?
No, I don't. I think, that's like saying Westbrook fit in with the Lakers. Luka and Kyrie are both point guards, both have to have the ball in their hand, both alpha dogs. So how does that work together? They both seem to play the same position. So, it didn't work last year. It's not going to work this year. So, if I'm in that front office, I'm seeing, can we sign Kyrie and get two good players for him? Can we get a knockdown shooter? Can we get a wing defender, a two-way player? Can we get a legitimate big? That's what I'm doing. What if we could get rid of him and get Brooke Lopez as an unrestricted free agent? What about we get him with Luka? What happens then? I don't see how he fits. He's a great player. We know his antics off the court. He's bounced from team to team. There's a reason for that. So you're recruiting LeBron to Dallas. That's never going to happen. What are you going to give the Lakers for LeBron? The 10th pick? who is Grady Dick from KU. Asar Thompson from Overtime Elite, a 19-year-old kid. What? No, the 10th pick means nothing. You know, the 10th pick is random. Hopefully you get something. But now, I could see the Dallas signing Kyrie and trading them to the Lakers, but I don't know what they would want from the Lakers, because the Lakers, by the way, have 7 free agents, by the way. And they have 7 free agents. And I think they have a couple, and somebody else with a player option.
Some money tied up in AD and LeBron.
Well, and Russell, right?
That's Are they still playing for Westbrook?
No.
Oh, you mean D'Angelo Russell?
Yeah, D'Angelo Russell. That's $30 million. So you're looking at about $100 million between those three guys now. I hope they don't. I wouldn't think they'd sign D'Angelo Russell because he was a flop. Even though he's only 26 or 27, still, but he was a flop. I mean, are you going to pay? If you lock him up, now you're talking about $100 million of your $135 million, that's locked up in three players. So and you haven't signed Reeves yet. He's a free agent.
I think teams like the Lakers and Phoenix are really playing with fire because, the Lakers' best player is LeBron, and he's going to be almost 40 years old. Chris Paul is the catalyst for the Suns, and he's going to get hurt. And you still tied to him, I think, for 2 more years.
LeBron's 40 years old and makes $50 million. And nice. CP is old and broken, and he makes $40 million. And you're going to pay him for the next 2 years. I mean,
that ties your hands.
It's going to be interesting what Vogel does in Phoenix. I mean, he's got his hands full.
I'm glad you mentioned Vogel's hiring in Phoenix because Chris Ramsey wants our thoughts on some of the hirings that took place last week. What was the one that stood out to you, Mo, that you liked?
Adrian Griffin with the Bucks. Adrian played for me. I congratulate him on the text. I'm going to see him this summer. He's got 15 years of experience. He played in the league. He's been assistant coach for a long time. He's level-headed. I think they need a new voice in that organization, but they still have – see if they can sign Middleton. But he can change that into – he can get them to the finals next year. Nick Nurse in Philly is scary to me. That means Harden's going to sign a multi-year contract because Nick Nurse was the head coach of the G League team for the Rockets when Daryl Morey was the GM of the Rockets. They know each other. They're friends. And guess who else is friends? Harden. So they're all friends. And I don't think Harden, you're going to run it back with that same group. You're going to get the same final thing that happens, and you're not going to get to the finals. So, I love the hiring of Monty Williams in Detroit, even though he's making $1 zillion. And I just saw that he signed Steven Silas, I think, as one of his assistants.
Yeah.
Great. I was on the road as an advanced scout with Steve years ago. Very knowledgeable, great X and O guy. Monty Williams is a good X and O guy, not great, but a good personnel guy, good relationship guy. I think they make a dynamic combination there. Frank Vogel in Phoenix, toss up. Like to see someone a little more dynamic there. But, if you got KD and you got Chris Paul, and then you got Booker. He's in the same boat he was with the Lakers. Not much of a voice and going to get blamed for everything. That's what's going to happen. Watch. He will be fired in a year and a half. Watch.
Hey, this is a great question. Do you think, from David Finkel, do you think the Heat's roster is making a mockery of the NBA draft?
Well, I've
I think you think the NBA draft is a mockery anyway.
I've said that from the beginning. There's no guarantees in the NBA draft. You're drafting 18, 19, and 20-year-olds. They're just kids. They don't know how to play. I mean, you know, they got talent and wingspan and athleticism and blah, 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 blah. They haven't played 1 minute in a professional league. So, you know, it's a crapshoot. I mean, look at the draft this year. Wembanyama, the 7'4 French kid, yeah, he's going to be a player. But other than that, you know, you're talking about Brandon Miller from Alabama, a nice two-way wing player, nice. Then you got Scoot Henderson, who I've seen many times, a questionable point guard. And then you have all the rest. So what's the first round of the draft worth? It's mind-boggling to me that
and the Joker was the 41st pick.
Absolutely. So, you know, you got to do your research. You got to do more than just measure people's and their athleticism and their arm span. And you got to go into their psyche. And are they competitive? Do they have high basketball IQ? If we run a lot of dribble handoffs, can they do a dribble handoff? If we run a post-up offense, can they do that? You know, are they willing defenders? Are they good teammates? And that's how you find players like Miami did and go on down the line. It's like college recruiting. Go look up college recruiting. Go check out the top teams. All they do is they look at the players out there. Now it's different. It's all transfer portal. But before, they used to look at high school players, 3, 4, 5 stars. That's what we want. We want 4 and 5 stars. We're going to find the point. Who's making them 5 stars anyway? Who's doing that? And then how do you know they fit in with you? And how do you know they're real? So, you know, it's lazy to me. And the best teams that have success with the draft, like Miami, like the Spurs over the years, right? Tony Parker, guys like that, you know, are the ones that go deeper into the draft and don't just pick somebody because people are clapping. Like, oh, great pick. Great pick, yes.
Hey, I don't know if you had a chance to scout LeBron before he came into the league, but could you see this coming, 20 years of outstanding play?
Sure. I mean, I didn't see him in person. I saw him on video. Look at his size. Look at his skill level. Look at his competitiveness. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Sometimes you do see guys that, okay, but that is not the case for most NBA draft picks.
No, it's a case for 10. I just told you there's one close to guarantee, Wembanyama, and there's one that probably can play, and then there's everybody else that, you know, they're 18 and 19 years old. Right, it's the same draft. You know what? We're drafting these guys for somebody else because by the time they can play, we'll be fired. You know, why are we picking this 18-year-old guy that can't play? He's gonna, you know, he's either gonna sit on our bench or he's gonna go down to the G League and be, you know, play some games, and then we're gonna bring him up and then we're gonna play him 5 minutes here, and then, you know, that's what the draft now. Is the Miami Heat roster making a mockery of the draft, maybe to some point, but is the draft just a mockery anyway? Ooh, that's deep right there. Think about that, gentlemen. Think about that.
Yeah. Hey, Mo, we're going to get out of here early, a little early tonight, but we will be back. Although I want to get you on the guy that won the dunk contest, Matt McClung. Was that his name? Is that his last name?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, he won that.
Yeah, so he played in the
He can dunk.
Yeah, but he's a good player. I mean, he's solid. You know, he's athletic. He's kind of like a Jimmer Fredette without a jump shot, but more athletic. But you know, he played in the G League, put up okay numbers, went up to Utah, I think, and played a few games, but you know, he's a project, and you know, I mean, look at, like, you're talking about the draft. Austin Reeves wasn't drafted.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, hell, I was the 42nd pick.
And played 12 years. And I guarantee you there was some lottery picks in that draft.
I've gone through that. I'm telling you, I bet there's only four guys or five that played more years than me. And there's a whole handful of drafted before me that played 2 years at the most, and we're done.
But you know what, man? It is an exclusive fraternity that you belong to where the guys play 2-3 years, because you're talking about the best in the world.
Only like 5,000 in 75 years have played in the NBA for a year.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Hey, guys, we want to thank you. We're going to get out of here a little early tonight.
Okay, let me make that prediction then. Denver wins game 3 unless Caleb Martin comes up big, and then Miami wins. There you go.
And what about the Golden Knights?
Tell you what, if you guys are, I'm not a super hockey fan, but I watch these games. Tell you what, that game last night was physical. Bodies were flying, teeth were flying. I think if the Knights can get one, they got to go back. They're going to be playing in Miami. They're playing the Miami, whatever they are, the same day that the Miami Heat are playing. So, I think if the Golden Knights can get one game in Miami, then they'll come back and finish it off here in Vegas, and then we'll have a big party here. Like we don't have big parties everything in Vegas. Come on,
Mo, hearing you talk about physical hockey, it sounded like it made you a little homesick for the NBA, man.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to Linda last night when we were watching the game. I'm like, you know what? I couldn't play hockey because I'd just be looking to get shots at people. I'd be in the penalty box the whole time, and the coach would be mad at me because I'm just trying to get a good elbow into Ricky's face. I don't care where the puck is. I'm just trying to get one of these shots right there.
We got to get out of here. We should be back on our regular schedule. I don't know. Well, we got some change. We could be coming to this hour because you got some stuff going on. We will just go to our Facebook page. We got next. We'll be filling you in on that. But for the big fella, Paul Mokeski, I'm Rick Hampton. We're going to get out of here. Peace, everybody. See you later.